consumers don't know anything, or in some cases enough, about their provider. Providers, in many cases, don't know anything about the patient, especially if the patient is seeing other providers that that provider isn't aware of. And payers don't really know, you know, what providers or consumers are doing, you know, beyond the data that they're getting. You could argue that technically payers may know the most because, again, they've got all the source data is coming back to them. But people are like blindly stumbling through the healthcare system right now, and that is just like profoundly, deeply suboptimal. You know, we've taken lots of great steps over the past couple of years, you know, ACOs and, you know, APCDs and multi-payer reporting and different things like that. But we are still on the very early stages of a journey towards true healthcare transparency. So how is CMS walking the data transparency walk, not just talking the talk? Because, again, and I'm going to get to this later in my presentation, it's very easy to talk about transparency and like have an all-day session and talk about principles and stakeholders and different things like that. And I'm not saying that what we've done is perfect, but we've actually released data. And we've released it in vast quantities, and we want others to do the same. So, you know, it doesn't matter if it's hospital compare data. You know, we've built friendlier tools in our website so people can find data, just simple things. People can find data on the CMS website. CMS data people couldn't find data on the CMS website. You've probably heard me tell this joke before, but like you'd find this data set and it will be available from 2007 to 2011. And then like you someday somebody'd ask for something and it would be, you know, 2014, and you'd look and the data just stopped at 2011, and you'd make a phone call and they'd tell you to call somebody else, and they'd tell you to call somebody else, and they'd tell you to call somebody else. And then eventually you'd find a person who could answer your question, why don't we have more recent data? Why don't we have data through 2013 or 2014? And they'd be like, well, Mary retired. So did Mary give documentation or, you know, no, she just retired and she left and that data set stopped being released. So that's literally the truth. And we also have hospital charge data, physician data, geographic variation data, chronic condition data, and open payments data, which came out last week, and there's lots more. And it's all available at that URL below. That's actually an error. I forgot to get rid of that text box, but it's kind of relevant, so it works. So recent high-profile CMS data releases, hospital charge data, outpatient data, and of course the physician charge and utilization data. So you know you saw us going from, again, if you look at a continuum or a life cycle of data releases, we kind of went from, you know, we released some geographic variation data, and we released hospital compare data and things like that, and then we released the hospital charge data, so that was 155,000 records, and then obviously in April, we released 9 million records on 880,000 individual providers. And so the thing, I'll get to this again in a little bit later, it's not perfect, but it didn't exist before. The day before the physician data release, really all people knew about their doctors was name, address, phone number, and what their friends told them. Regardless of what you think of the pros or cons of our Medicare physician data release, for every doctor in America, you now know the scope of their practice in Medicare. It's not the scope of their entire practice. Wouldn't it be great if we could see the scope of their entire practice? Wouldn't it be great if it was linked to quality information? But just because it's not the scope of their entire practice, and just because it's not linked to quality information, is not an excuse to not do it. And so, obviously, these have been pretty well received. The hospital charge data release, they were both really big deals, so like headlines in newspapers and lots of stories and different things like that. And you know, I will just never get tired of this. Like, my work was on The Daily Show. Actually, technically, Lucas is right. Allison's work was on The Daily Show. And Jon Stewart called it a miracle of competence in government. Okay? That's pretty cool. We don't get a lot of praise, so we gotta take it where we can get it, you know? Lest I remind you guys of my appearance here 4 years ago, when, like, you know, I was like on the podium as you guys threw shit at me. So the interesting thing about all these transparency releases, right? So these are like the grumpy old dudes from the Muppets, is you've got to start somewhere with transparency, right? But when we released the hospital charge data, conventional wisdom, they were outraged. So the gray-bearded, ominous Greece economists who have, you know, carefully, you know, presided over the growth of the U.S. healthcare system to almost a quarter of our economy, they spluttered and they raged and they said nobody pays charges and this is completely, you know, it's a distraction and it's no good. Well, you know, those people are all well insured, for starters, okay? If you're uninsured, even if you don't ultimately pay charges, that is the bill that you get. That is the bill that you can't pay, and that is the bill that is sent to your debt collector, even if you eventually negotiate it down. So for somebody to say that hospital charge data is irrelevant or not helpful, I think it frankly shows how out of touch they are with the day-to-day life of Americans. So another quote at the bottom, very famous Irish writer called Brendan Behan, who once described himself as a drinker with a writing problem. My phone is ringing. Oh, I can't take that. He said critics are like eunuchs in a harem. So, just roll with it. These are just some maps that you can do with the hospital charge data. Again, the bottom line is for like the exact same service, there's like, you know, four or five, six-fold variation in the same city, you know, let alone, everybody talks about National Geographic variation. You can take any major metropolitan area in the country and find massive variation. and that's like changed from year to year. So, and then the physician utilization data, you know, one of the things is when you release a 100,000 line data set or whatever, like you can, you know, it's this tension, right? You know, and especially when Todd Park was encouraging us to release as much stuff as possible. He was like, just put the raw data out, just put the raw data out, just put the raw data out. And that works to a certain extent. And certainly you want data scientists and entrepreneurs and folks like you to like integrate it with your other data sources. But I also think, like, you know, when these things get so high profile, you sort of do have a responsibility to make it at least a little bit more consumer friendly. But, you know, we kind of have a tortured history. Like, you know, when we build websites, we have to have like consumer testing and focus groups, and like, you know, pretty soon, like 18 months have gone by, and you end up with this, like, you know, Kafka-esque like website by committee. But what we did with the physician data, it's 8 million lines of data, right? That's completely overwhelming for all but, you know, the people in this room, basically. And so we built a very simple lookup tool where anybody can enter their physician first name, last name, and you get this nice little clean report that tells you. Now, you know, again, it's not perfect, but it is a way of, you know, taking lots and lots and lots of data and bring it into something that at least is more understandable and visually appealing. So open payments launched last week. This is actually a data release that I was not involved in, but they released a lot of information on physician relationships with industry. So again, you talk about, you go back to the blindfolded comment earlier. I think that patients deserve to know how much their physicians are being paid by major drug and device companies. And again, this isn't a game of gotcha. A lot of these, a lot of these releases, like, you know, they're called, some people call it naming and shaming. I spoke to somebody in New Zealand, they've done the same thing, they called it ranking and spanking. It's transparency, right? So if my doctor invented something really cool that saves a million lives a year and gets $1 million in royalty payments, I think I should know that, because that makes me want to see that doctor. If my doctor is aggressively pushing spinal surgery on me when, you know, I've only had back pain for 6 months, and I find out that he's getting $500,000 a year from the dude who makes the spine surgery thing, you know, I want to know that too, right? Because again, people need to be informed and understand more about the healthcare, their providers and the healthcare system in general. So another couple of things we have going on, you guys may have seen some of this before. Again, there's a continuum of data products ranging from, like, you know, very technical stuff that only experts can use. But again, we want to make it more more approachable. This is our chronic conditions dashboard. This is a county level dashboard that lets you explore the Medicare fee-for-service population according to the number of chronic conditions they have. You can see their readmissions, their total spending, I believe, ER visits and different things like that. And down at the bottom, it's my favorite part of the dashboard. This is not the entire dashboard. There's lots of little things and drop-downs and you can do. So I would urge people to explore it. But the bottom, I call it the solar system, because of what it is each bubble represents a county. And the size of the bubble represents the number of Medicare fee-for-service beneficiaries in the county. So, you know, and you can see, I think it's disease prevalence and spending. So I think what it allows people to do is to immediately understand and focus where they'll get the most bang for their buck in terms of interventions. Like the tiny, tiny little bubble way over to the right. So that's a problem when my eyesight's going. That's like $26,000 or something like that. So that's a problem, right? But it's a relative handful of Medicare beneficiaries. Maybe you focus in on the two larger bubbles that are just a little bit into the left, but still have significantly higher spending relative to their peers. And so in terms of other data dissemination activity, this is one of the areas where I kind of dialed it back. You know, if anybody wants more information on this, they can ask Allison. We're giving data to ACOs, we're giving data to qualified entities, we're giving data to researchers, we're giving data to states. That came up yesterday. QIOs have obviously always gotten data. CMMI is doing a lot of work with Innovation Center grantees and giving them data, and we're also giving Medicare beneficiaries their own data through Blue Button. So I wanted to close out with a couple of things that I did want to flag for you. I may have talked about this last year, but you know, I want to talk about it again because it's so important. So for years, with researchers, they would come in, with really anybody who got qualified for data under our rules. We would come, you know, people would decide what data they would get. We would put it on encrypted hard drives and we would FedEx it to them. Okay, and we actually never had a data breach, yay, or one that we found out about. But you know, it's 2014, so like not ideal. And actually, that method of providing data, A, restricted the universe of people that we could provide data to, because it had to be this like trusted, like inner circle of folks, and also like sort of folks who'd figured out how to work the system, and it's not an easy system to work. I see lots of heads nodding. I kind of lost my train of thought. Anyway, so we launched the Virtual Research Data Center, and so this is the future. Okay, and it's not that we're not going to physically deliver data anymore. Oh, I think my point was, you know, it actually created a barrier to entry because, you know, the resources around storing the protected kind of data that you get create a significant barrier to entry for any new entrants. Like, it's fine for the Dartmouths of the world who've got their like NIH grants and their foundation grants and this and that and the other, right? And so they've got this like amazing, secure, FISMA compliant data center. But, you know, I personally don't think it's equitable or fair that, like, you know, those folks should be the only ones with access to the data. We're not going to cut off access to the data. They still want to get physical data. That's fine. Also, physical data, more expensive than virtual data. So 100% of A, B, and D data is, I think, about $150,000 or $200,000 per year. And in the virtual research data center, you can get access to as much data as you want, as long as it meets HIPAA minimum necessary criteria, for $40,000 per year per user. So, you know, and yes, people still, like, you know, whine and complain at me that $40,000 is a lot of money, and I'm like, yeah, it is, but, you know, we've got our own, like, cost structure to support. We are legally permitted to recoup the costs of making data available. And this is not a, we're a self-funding line in the CMS budget. There is no line item. If people want to write to their congressperson and ask for a line item for my office, go for it, right? But until then, people are going to have to pay for data. So, but it's more secure from a privacy and security perspective. It's cheaper. It's just more modern. And so folks can VPN in. Their data will be there. We'll give them tools to analyze the data. They play with the data. They can bring their own data in. They can mush it up with our data. And they can take data out as long as it's aggregated data that's not PII. So this is the future. State requests came up yesterday, so I just thought I'd throw this up at the very end. We've done a lot of work to try and make it easier for states to get data. And I was, of course, exposed as the charlatan I am by Allison again yesterday, because I didn't know that they could get it as frequently as quarterly, but apparently they can. Thank you, Allison. States can actually share that data beyond the originating state agency. They can give it to other state agencies or other entities that are conducting essentially state contractors. They still work through RESDAC. I would say for most people in this room, RESDAC should be your friend. Okay, they are wonderful people, Minnesota, very nice, and they will help people understand and navigate how to get CMS data. Because one of the things is, you know, we've kind of gone from a situation where, you know, there really were only a couple of ways to get CMS data, but now there are more and more ways to get CMS data. And it's even challenging us, like, you know, well, if I'm a QE, I have to do this and this and this. But if I'm a state, I have to do this and this and this. And so, you know, obviously we deal with those questions with you a lot. So, final slide. Transparency, Adams Dudley said it yesterday, like, it is inevitable. I mean, it's more than inevitable, it's already here, okay? Transparency is way harder than most people realize, okay? And this is where, like, I'll get on my soapbox again a little bit. I think people, maybe you guys don't, but, like, you know, people think that, like, I kind of sashayed into CMS and kind of, like, found this vast trove of data just, like, kind of sitting there, and everybody was like, oh, yeah, Niall, why don't you just shove some of that out the door and we'll see what happens, okay? Releasing data publicly is really, really, really hard, okay? I'm not, like, you know, looking for, like, you know, praise around, but it's just, it's hard, right? So the physician data, okay? The Florida judge overturned that ruling, I think, in, like, you know, May or June of 2013. And we basically worked a team of about five people, no, more than five people, for 11 months to actually release that data. You had to run the policy traps, you had to run the legal traps, you had to do, it's the government, right? You had to have it cleared by Maryland, you had to have it cleared by the secretary, you had to have it cleared by the White House, you know, and this was stuff that people wanted to happen. Like, you know, in some cases, like, they didn't want it to happen. And it took 11 months. You had to run the data. You had to QA the data to within an inch of its life because, you know, A, profound cultural resistance in CMS to transparency and releasing data. We're slowly changing it. But B, what if the data is wrong? I mean, like, everybody talks about transparency and how great it is, okay? But as you know, as the data releaser, and you guys will be in that situation, it's a pretty heavy responsibility. And we know that despite my, you know, earlier love sonnets to claims data, the claims data is, you know, fundamentally, like, you know, dirty at the margin. So what if the data is wrong? Like, you know, you have to, because if you go out with something that's wrong, it can undo you know, 11 months or 2 years worth of work. All you need is one disaster, whether it's wrong data or somebody's re-identified, and we're completely, completely back to square one. And it's very much a work in progress. So we're doing lots of stuff. But people ask me all the time, like, you know, well, what impact has the physician data had? And honestly, I don't know. I mean, sure, like that instant, like, you know, hit from the media, like, it's nice, don't get me wrong, it feels good. But like, what's the real impact? You know, I mean, are people actually using it, or is the impact that people realize that, you know, nobody died? And that, like, you know, that maybe it needs to be combined with private sector data, or that maybe, you know, it needs to be, you know, combined with some other data source, or maybe it doesn't help at all. But to a certain extent, even if it doesn't help at all, it's not an argument for not having it out there. We should let the market decide what is useful and what is not useful as we move towards transparency. So you've been very patient. Thank you very much. And I, you know, maybe I'll get invited back next year. So thank you.
Denise, I assume we have time for questions?
Yeah.
Okay. So we open up the floor, and I will help shield Niall from the slings and arrows. Al Prezanka must not be in the room if there are no questions.
Yeah.
Who's the audience? Why? Who do you think is going to care? What will they do with it? Because I'm not sure it's going to change patient behavior, nor am I sure it should.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a really interesting point, and almost the fundamental point of all this activity around transparency and public reporting. Like, who is the audience? And like, if consumers never look at this data, but physicians, because they're massively egotistical, you know, care about how they look in public and change how they practice as a result, then that's a success. I mean, I think, you know, if you put your, you know, consumers need to get more involved in their care, you know, patient activation kind of thing, you know, I think we need to explore ways in which it can engage them more. But you're right. So I went to see a dermatologist like 3 weeks after the data release. And so I was like, oh, let me have a look. And I didn't, you know, it was actually one of those classic US healthcare system stories. Like, you know, I called my regular dermatologist. I was told I wouldn't be seen for 6 months. So I downloaded this cool new app called ZocDoc and basically said, like, I'd like to see a dermatologist. And like, one popped up with an appointment at 9 o'clock the next morning. So it's kind of like, you know, Uber for doctors or something. See, I told you I would get Uber in there.
Thank you.
You know, so I looked him up, right, because I had no clue. And, you know, I mean, this guy was really trucking. Like, he was doing, like, thousands of things to Medicare beneficiaries. So is that a good thing or a bad thing? Like, should I be, like, you know, calling up the fraud office at Medicare and saying, you might want to have a look at this guy? You know, I don't know. I think, you know, now one of the examples that we gave when we were releasing the data, and I think it's relatively simple example, but also makes some sense. Like, if you're going to have a knee operation, right, you probably don't want to go to somebody who only did 5 of them last year. You know, so like in terms of an actual practical thing that the data could be used for, you know, ideally I think you want to go to somebody who's doing it a lot based on the, you know, predicated on the assumption that if you're doing something a lot, you're an expert at it. But then with the dermatologist story, when does doing something a lot and being an expert at it become doing something so much that you may be abusing the payment system. So that's an absolutely fair point, Claudia. So,
all right, Denise, just I did not realize that we only gave Niall 30 minutes. And so do we want to jump into the transparency panel and then just bombard the panel with the questions? Okay, so write down your questions and let's transition.
Oh, I went over, sorry.
That's all right, it's expected, Niall, it's fine. Okay, so great, thank you, Niall, and we'll quickly transition.
I took my tie off. I saw that Niall wasn't wearing one. I said, oh, well. And it is San Diego. Yeah.
We want to mic folks up first.
Or socks. You could have socks. I'm good. Yeah, here we go.
All right, great.
Go nuts.
All right, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks. My name is Shelley Lyford. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of West Health, and I'm going to spend just a few moments before we jump into our